This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Comedian Dominique has performed alongside the likes of Tracy Morgan, Chris Rock, and Dave Chappelle. But she says her comedic inspiration doesn't come from these comedy all-stars, comes instead from her mother. She was raised by a straightforward woman who encouraged her to tell the truth and call it like you see it. And that is exactly what she does on stage.
Because the police make you paranoid for no reason. You ain't got to be doing nothing. That's why when they pull me over, I say, I don't speak no English. They say, what? I don't speak no English. Well, what you speak? Nothing. You're going to have to look in my face and figure out what I'm thinking. You know, they make you sick. That's why when they get behind me, I just look at them. What? You drive on so I can follow you and see where you go. You know what I'm saying? You know, he got me going 30 miles out my way because I ain't got no blinker, so I can't turn. I'm just driving straight, hoping it ain't no dead end down that show.
That's Dominique performing stand-up on BET. She appeared on HBO's Def Comedy Jam. She was a finalist in last year's Last Comic Standing, and she's currently in the cast of the new hit TV series Black Jesus on Adult Swim. Well, she's in town for a number of shows at Goodnight's Comedy Club in Raleigh this weekend, but first she joins me live in the studio. Dominique, what a pleasure. Good to have you here.
Hi, Frank. Thank you for having
me. And from Washington, D.C., and it turns out I may have worked next to your mother.
I think you worked next to my mother. I know it was a long time ago, but my mother used to work when I was in elementary school, so this is years ago. She worked at NPR when it was on M Street
right
in
M Street.
D.C.
She worked for John with John Merrow on
with
Options
John.
In Education.
Yes, she
I would have worked there. I was, by the way, when I was working there, I was 9 years old, too. Kind of a public radio prodigy.
So we're about the same age.
I think so, a little bit. So tell me more about your mom, because you say she's really your inspiration.
Her and I should have mentioned my grandmother as well. I'm basically, my family calls me an imposter on stage because I'm basically my mother on stage.
Wow.
I am, because I have a lot of her ways and her mannerisms and everything, Frank. So, but she just was really no nonsense. And she would always give us, if you will, I guess you could say, a hard word. Even when you were little, you were like, geez, she could have said, she could have smoothed that out a little bit. Yeah. But in hindsight, I'm very thankful. I'm very thankful.
But that kind of rough honesty, and I suppose about yourself as well, is really what it takes, is the difference between telling jokes and being a successful professional comedian. Am I right?
I think that can be the case.
What about that? Because you impressed your coworkers. You were working like overnights at the post office. Am I right?
Yeah, I worked the late shift. It's called Tour One, Frank. I worked there at the post office. So it's like I went to work at 10:30 at night, and I got off like at 7 o'clock in the morning. Everybody's silly during that hour, and especially when you're 19 and 20 years old, you're really silly.
I'm saying that you need to take that off your resume, though, because saying you tore it up on the overnight at the post office, I mean, it may not. But you're very funny now. So was that some of the impetus? Were they telling you you're funny and you decided that, hey, maybe I'll try this out?
But everybody always would say I was funny. Uh-huh. Even growing up, I just had this knack for being funny even growing up. And so, you know, my mother, I could really imitate people well. So, you know, my mother would have me imitate the pastor at church. I know that's not funny, but I really could imitate him well. Because every Easter, he preached the same sermon. I don't know what it was, but every Easter, he would preach, he's all right, and do you know him? I mean, it was every Easter, I didn't even want to go to church. I was like, I know what he's going to say. Aren't you glad he got up? This one, the same thing. So I would do that. And one day she had me do it for my grandmother. Okay, my grandmother didn't find it funny.
She's like, that's dangerous.
Yeah, my grandmother's like, that's not funny, but okay, I understand that the girl has humor. So she would always say it, and I would tell my friends that. So what really happened, Frank, was one of my friends that I hung out with, we're still good friends today. She was working at the Pentagon in D.C., and a guy that she used to date and she had known years ago, he started working there, but he also was moonlighting as a comic. And she just mentioned to him, you know, one of my friends is really funny. And he called me, and that kind of got the ball rolling. And I wrote like 5 minutes of jokes, went over his house and did the jokes for him. I didn't go to the comedy club right away, though. I didn't. I was afraid, you know, and I had a job. And, you know, when you have a job and you live at home, you think you're making a lot of money. You don't really realize, no, you don't have to do anything but buy bread and washing detergent. So, you know.
What's the difference between being funny and then actually sitting down to write a joke? Do you? I mean, how do you do? That's a. It seems to be a different part of your brain that's engaged. No.
Well, I think I'm very my funny comes. It's really, I really get it from observing things, right? So I can be riding down the street, even when I leave here, and I can see something on the street and just begin to talk about it. And out of that is birthed this joke. And I might hear something that I say and say, I'm going to try that tonight at Good Nights and see how that goes over with the crowd. Even if they don't laugh at it a lot, it still gives me a direction to keep working on this particular premise. So I just observe stuff and I kind of come up with it like that.
Well, tell us about your relationship with Tracy Morgan, how you met him and what part that played in your career.
Oh, that's great. Tracy, and I actually just worked with Tracy in, I think it was April. We did an April Fool's Day show at the theater at Madison Square Garden. Wow. In New York. So I actually saw him. He's doing well, so he's doing pretty good. He's doing pretty good. But I met him years and years ago. I met him through a mutual friend. And then I went to New York, just rode up one night, and it was late, to this comedy club. And he was there. This is when he was wearing the Papella hat. He was still wearing that look. So he was there, and he asked me, did I want to go up? But I was too afraid. I was like, no, I'm not ready to go up out of town. I'm from D.C. I'm just still, you know, watching and seeing what's going on. And he just liked me.
How did he come to know you in the first place?
Through a mutual friend. I went to a show of his with a friend of mine that knew him.
Yeah.
And they were friends. And that's how I met him. And we just kind of like clicked. And from there, he's always just like, help me. And you need people like that in any business, I would suppose, but especially in entertainment. He let me feature for him at Caroline's on Broadway. I don't know if you're familiar.
That's a tough club to get into.
That's a tough club to get into, and I was able to get into that club because I went in with him. And even when he wasn't working there, they would call and say, oh, we have this spot. Would you like to do it? So that was really, really
great.
So that's
you making it. I mean, it's one thing to say, I know I've got this friend, Tracy, but on the other hand, to get the call back.
That was great.
You got to be. So what broke the ice for you? How did you overcome your fear of the stage?
Well, I didn't really have a fear of the stage because growing up, I would always go up in front of people. Like, even if it was at church, I would do not the announcements. I would do the welcome at church. At school, I would stand up and recite plays. So getting in front of people was never really, really hard as far as stand-up is concerned.
But you said you weren't ready to go up on stage. People were encouraging, and you say, oh, not yet.
I'm talking about when I went to New York to see Trey. When I went to that club,
I see.
I was just afraid of going up in an unfamiliar city.
Okay.
You know, I was still getting my – I was like, I don't know if I'm ready for this club right here. One of those kind of things. But I had been up. Before I went there, I had been going up already. So I didn't really have that fear. My biggest thing was writing something to talk about and to keep talking. Mm. So that was more of a challenge.
Was it Tracy who encouraged you to then move out of D.C.?
It was Mike Epps, actually.
Tell me more about that.
I met Mike Epps. I used to host a room with Joe Clare and Red Grant in D.C. It's called Tacoma Station. Mm. Yeah, we had a Monday night comedy room there. And Mike, he would come down. He lived in New York at the time. And I think Red knew Mike. And he would come down and he would do the comedy show. And once again, as fate would have it, we clicked. He liked me. I liked him. And he told me, he said, you know, D.C. is a small town. He said, I know it's your hometown and your whole family is here and all of those things. He said, but I'm from Indianapolis, and I live in New York now, and I lived in Atlanta before I got to Indianapolis. And I think to give yourself a shot in the business at anything you're trying to do, you got to get out your comfort zone and get out your small town. If you move to New York or something like that, more people will see you, and it'll help you build your stand-up act and those kind of things. And it was great information.
So it really did. How did it help you? I mean, I'm hearing a couple of things there. One, you're going to get a different kind of exposure to a different kind of audience. Mm-hmm. It won't be the same old family and friends coming to see you. But what about just sort of confronting different ideas about comedy? Does it change the way you approach comedy by being in a place that makes you a little uncomfortable?
I think it should. I think it did with me working in front of all different ethnic diversities and constantly working. Like when I was in D.C., I would do a gig here, I would do a gig there. But once I got to New York, it was such a big city. They have 5 boroughs. So I was able to go to each borough, even all up into the New England states. So it just opened me up to a vast variety of people. And it made me stronger as a stand-up because I was able to work so much in front of so many different audiences. It made you be diverse. It just made you dig deeper, in my opinion. And so I'm from D.C. and born and raised, but as a stand-up, I can really say I'm birthed out of New York City, actually.
That's interesting. What's the difference between being funny and becoming a professional comedian?
I think you have to know and you have to believe that you can make a living at being funny. And I think those things kind of happened early on for me. I didn't make a lot of money, but I know if I kept working on it and kept getting better, that my money would grow. When I started, I was making $50 here. Then it went to $500. I was like, oh, you know, this is getting good.
I'm wondering, what are the things you focus on? Because, again, you know, you're making them laugh on the overnights mm-hmm. in the post office. Your family has been laughing at you and my friends with you for a long, long time. So you get it. You've got a sense of humor and you make people laugh. Mm-hmm. Now you're doing it in an audience that has paid a lot of money to make them laugh. Mm-hmm. It's a different environment. And I'm wondering what it is you work on, you know, how you shape things. Is it, you know, Do you sit down and keep working on the rhythm of that joke and looking at the delivery? Is it the writing? What parts change for you from just going from just being funny to actually being able to do it night after night?
I work, I think the thing I work on the most, Frank, is I work on, I like to dig a joke out. And when I say that, I mean continue to talk about it and talk about it in different ways so I can maximize it, you know, because I can take one joke and I can talk about it this way. But if I talk about it one particular way, that may lead me to a whole nother joke about a whole nother subject just because of a few words. So I really, really work on maximizing the joke and stretching it out and getting everything that I can get out of the joke. What makes me able to talk to people, get up in front of people and do stand-up? I think that once you know you're funny, Frank, and you're able to, and you can put some jokes together, the rest you just have to get up there and work out. And the biggest thing is the difference from starting until this point is the more and more you work, you find out who you are on stage. So once you find out, who am I on stage? And I think I'm still learning. I'm doing well now, but I think it's ever evolving and you never stop learning until it's over for you, period. I think that in life, but and you have to figure out who you are on stage.
Do you have to know who you are off stage first? I mean, do you have to be centered
that
in that way?
That would really help.
Because it seems to me that the greatest comics, and a lot of your material does this to me too, it comes from a kind of rude honesty about yourself.
Yes.
And, you know, your environment. And you're just going to be blunt honest about it. Mm-hmm. And I think some of the best comics do that. But that means knowing who you are, because some of it's not always flattering.
Right? It's not always flattering. So you definitely have to know who you are. Yeah. I think you do. And I think we're always discovering more and more about ourselves as we age, as we go through just the process of life. We discover more and more. But if you know who you are off your stage to a certain degree, a great amount, that's definitely going to help you on stage.
Are there subjects that are off limits to you? Do you not talk about certain?
There are. I don't like to make people feel uncomfortable. I don't like that. When you pay your money and you're eating and having a drink, I don't want you to feel like, oh God, I don't want you to be offended. You know, you might always say something that might step on the toe here, step on the toe there. That's fine. But I don't want you to be totally offended at my show. So I'm not going to talk about handicapped people. I don't think that that's funny. I don't get into the whole homosexual thing and bashing and all that. You know, if you're homosexual and that's fine. I don't care. It's all right with me, but I don't think it's something. You don't want anybody to bash your homosexuality. And then I will talk about race sometimes, but not very heavy. We know the issues of race in our country and the things. You don't have to beat a drum with that. Everybody's clear on that. So I just don't want you to be offended. When you leave, I want you to say, okay. I mean, everybody's not going to like you anyway. You know, that's just the nature of the game. But at least I don't want you to leave like, oh, God, this was horrendous. You know what I mean?
You do a lot of bits, but one comes to mind in particular where you talk about, it's usually at the beginning of your act, you kind of warm people up, welcome here, and you talk about, you know, just be, you know, make sure everything feels good. You know, just let go. Right. Mm-hmm. Can I prompt you to do a little bit of that? This is where you talk about you just let go, and in fact, you do that with your credit card bill, right?
Oh, where I don't pay it?
Well, you don't pay your credit
card
bill.
Yeah, I don't pay it.
And it's a real great, it's a characterization, but then in a way, there's also a way in which you create a type for yourself, right?
Yeah.
You talk about not paying your credit card bill.
Not paying my credit card
hilarious.
Bill.
When I saw the bit, it reminded me of what Dave Chappelle said about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Right? He was on Oprah, and he's talking about, we've got the clip here. I want to play it.
Okay.
Dave Chappelle, he's on Oprah. This is after he left, walked away, $50 million, right? Walks away from mm-hmm. the show. What happened to Dave Chappelle? Mm-hmm. Now he's on Oprah, and he's trying to explain. And one of the things he's talking about is a performance that he gave that made him feel very uncomfortable.
Like, there's this one sketch we did that was about this pixie that would appear whenever racist things happens. Whenever someone make you feel like they calling you that N-word. But the pixie was in blackface. Now, blackface is a very difficult image. But the reason I had chosen blackface at the time was because this was going to be the visual personification of the N-word. It was a good spirit or intention behind it. So then when I'm on the set and we're finally taping the sketch, somebody on the set that was white laughed in such a way. I know the difference of people laughing with me and people laughing at me. And it was the first time I'd ever gotten a laugh that I was uncomfortable with.
Hmm.
Not just uncomfortable, but like, should I fire this person?
This is Dave Chappelle on the Oprah Winfrey Show in 2006. I'm talking with stand-up comedian Dominique, who will be performing at Good Nights Comedy Club in Raleigh tonight, tomorrow, and Sunday. What do you make of that clip?
I don't know if I've ever experienced that, but I can imagine that has to be very uncomfortable. And you'll know the difference. Like, if you're sitting in the audience, and like, well, I guess you could say early on I experienced it, just like in the audience. Maybe when I first, early on in my career, and you're not that funny, and somebody was like, it's like, you're not like that, you know? And it's really, because when you're on stage, you're very vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're performing in front of people, it's like, okay, I'm doing my best here, and I'm trying really, really hard, and you're not laughing with me. So if you're laughing at me, it's like you're teasing me.
Yeah.
And I don't know if people realize this about comics, and I'm sure just entertainers. It sounds crazy, but we're very insecure people.
Mm-hmm.
We really, really are. We can get in front of all these people and do this job and do this work. But deep down inside, we're really, really insecure people. And we're really sensitive about our art.
Yeah.
Like Erykah Badu said, I'm very sensitive. So if you hear something that doesn't sound right or somebody's laughing, then you're like, you're not, because you know if it's funny enough for a person to laugh. You can just tell in the way that they laugh, it wasn't that funny. You're making fun of me. Now you're clowning me, so I'm really, like, feelings are hurting.
I will tell you what fascinates me, because we've heard this before, you know, the idea that this is really rooted in insecurity, that a lot of the humor comes out and it's a defense, and much mm-hmm. of what happens on stage is a manifestation of that. And yet, after you have to have nights where it was just awful, and you go back and do it again and do it again. This is the incredible thing to me.
That's crazy, because it's like, in some ways, you know how people say when people are on drugs, once they do their first hit, they never stop. It has that effect, and I think, Frank, that it has that effect, because when you're up there and it's going right, it's nothing like it. I'm in front of this room. I'm huge right now. I'm on stage, and everybody's holding on to every single thing I'm saying, and they're laughing. That's power, and it's power that most people don't feel. So when you have that moment, you're like, even if I have a bad show tonight, even if I have a bad show the next night, I'm still trying to get back to that moment, and I know I can get back to that moment. Whether or not you can, that remains to be seen. That's in the eye of the beholder, but you're still trying to get it. It's very intoxicating. It's just something about it.
You can all feel the power if you go to Good Nights. Later this week, Dominique is going to perform this weekend at Good Nights Comedy Club in Raleigh. She's going to be there tonight and tomorrow at 7:30 and 10 p.m. and then Sunday at 7:30. Dominique is a recent finalist on Last Comic Standing, cast of the show Black Jesus on Adult Swim, and the host of her own podcast, Stirred Up Comedy. Dominique, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Frank. It was great. Thank you so much for having me.
You can find out more details at our website, stateofthings.org. Coming up, the music of the Swannanoa Gathering. Stay with us on the State of Things.